Welcome to She Talks Tech, the brand new podcast from We Are Tech Women.
What we found is that this is where people get uncomfortable because you don't really know exactly what this data is going to be used for, how long it's going to be maintained for, and also who exactly is going to have access to it.
I'm Vanessa Vallely OBE, founder of We Are The City and We Are Tech Women. Today we hear from the amazing Deborah O'Neill, the UK Head of Digital and partner of Oliver Wyman. Deborah leads complex digital transformations at some of the world's largest companies. In this session, Deborah shares her extensive experience as the UK looks to further contain COVID-19 through app-based contact tracing. Deborah also shares her views on insights on the public's attitude towards sharing personal data and how those attitudes are set to evolve. Deborah also explains what drives trust and explores whether it is possible to increase the degree to which people in the UK will wholeheartedly engage with data sharing and contact tracing. With the recent release of the NHS's Track and Trace app, this should be a really enlightening session.
Today, we're going to talk a little bit more about data and trust and what we've really learned through the COVID-19 crisis. I've actually spoken on this topic a few times before over the past years, and originally, this really started the GDPR story, but I think through GDPR, we've really seen a heightened awareness of what people understand and how much they're aware of what data is being shared. Last year in November, I talked about the sort of rise of the data and ethics intertwining and really seeing how that had evolved. And here we are now, sat in June, only sort of 6 months since that last conference, really seeing another challenge around data and how we're all having to share, use, understand, and as business leaders, really think through what that means for our businesses going forwards. So I'm really looking forward to sharing this with you. We're in the middle of a global pandemic, as we all know, and data has played a huge role in what we know so far, but also is proving quite challenging around thinking through how we're going to slow the spread of disease, but also how to get back to normality. Data has, you know, been a challenge. I think we've all learned that there are challenges around how it's collected, how it's used, and more importantly, how people feel about it. And the media and academics and government have all had to sort of grapple with sharing this information. More importantly, for those of us who are working in the technology data space, what we've learned is that the fragmented data ecosystem in the UK has meant that we've also struggled to build a holistic picture of data. But also that's something we all need to think about going forwards, because I'm sure as your businesses have tried to respond to COVID, the sort of scarcity of data or the non-real-time nature of it has also caused challenges. At last year's conference, we showed how public interest in data ethics and privacy was growing in response to GDPR and stories in the media about data breaches and AI bias. What you see here is when GDPR comes into force. So this is the Google Analytics data. So the Google searches for GDPR on the 25th of May, 2018. We also see a major spike around the Face app privacy concerns when it was talked about that it could access your entire camera roll. And then if we zoom in on the area from March this year, since the COVID crisis, it seems that there is starting to be a divergence. People are more interested in privacy than they are ethics. And you'll see the starting trend there of contact tracing, because previously it wasn't something that we really talked about or was something that people were aware of. And I think, you know, what this shows is people really are sort of hearing what's being said in government and are, as a whole population, for the first time really engaging in data privacy and what that means for our data and what we're sharing. Whereas before, data was something that more was talked about at a company level or sort of a business level, and the public weren't aware of what was going on. So some of the GDPR things, I think, has really caused a extensive set of education, but also heightened awareness, particularly because the media can cover these stories and share more information more readily. Through the COVID crisis, any sort of government has three outcomes that they're trying to achieve and optimize between: health, societal, and economic. In lockdown, there was a clear focus on health outcomes at the cost of the economic and societal outcomes. To manage the health, economic and societal outcomes of the pandemic, all different types of information are needed. For example, we need to identify where fiscal support is urgently needed up and down the country, or supermarkets planning for stocking shelves given disrupted supply chains and excess demand. And to be successful, this data has to be shared between multiple different stakeholder groups, such as private companies, hospitals, and academics. Some data sharing is relatively new, but it needs to become part of our normal. both to beat the current pandemic and to fully realise the big benefits that we'll be able to solve in the wider society moving forwards. And some data is much more easily shared than others. But for example, as part of the PPE response, there had to be a lot of interaction between the NHS and bodies in the government, understanding what supply there's going to be needed, how many was already available, and where the gaps were. And then the government to talk to private companies, e.g. the manufacturers, on, you know, what they can provide and when, so that the masks flow to the NHS. This is clearly critical information sharing, and it doesn't relate directly to personal data, so it doesn't raise as many major ethical concerns. However, it doesn't mean that it isn't complicated or easy to get wrong. We've learned through this crisis that actually this type of data sharing is relatively nascent, and that actually we don't have a philosophy of group data sharing between the public and private sector. Far more difficult to manage is the kind of personal data sharing needed for things like contact tracing, which obviously is a big topic of conversation. It has to be both anonymous enough to hide the identity of the individual, but accurate enough to track their interactions. What we found is that this is where people get uncomfortable, because you don't really know exactly what this data is going to be used for, how long it's going to be maintained for, and also who exactly is going to have access to it. Recently, in the Isle of Wight testing, it was agreed that 28 days would be the length of time that data would be held for, which was a purposeful statement because it talks about the purpose. We only need it to be able to contact trace for a limited piece of time, but also talks about the fact that it won't persist going forwards. And that's just an example of how trying to bring those technological challenges together that we're hearing more about at the moment with public perception and also the ethics around data usage actually become very intertwined. And it's something that as a society, we've never really had to face into in quite such a centralized manner before. Given this seemingly challenging trade-off between data sharing for the greater good and individual privacy, the Oliver Wyman Forum, which is Oliver Wyman's international research and think tank, we decided to test public opinion. We asked over 3,500 people how they felt about sharing three types of personal data, if it would help better manage the pandemic. So we asked them about biometric data collected in public settings, individual data shared from their mobile phones in terms of location, and then data about airline travel, specifically where they had been and to and from. When we first ran the survey in March, only around a third of people were willing to share their data. This is far below what is needed for contact tracing, as an example, to be effective, which is estimated to be around 60%. I also think it's interesting that people feel less comfortable sharing airline travel data as they do their biometric data. And one of the reasons we sort of think for this is that it's less clear why that helps. And I think there is something around that clarity of use and how it's going to be used and how it helps the situation that's really important to articulate. However, when we re-ran the survey again in May, people's attitudes had evolved across all types of personal data sharing. In some instances, nearly half of the people were willing to share their data. We believe this represents a jump in increasing awareness and public opinion around the importance of data and critically data sharing in battling the pandemic, but also probably a recognition of the fact people are keen to get back to some sort of normal and sort of some freedom and being able to operate again more freely. However, the story isn't the same for everyone. When we dug it further into the data, we were able to identify archetypes of individuals across two dimensions: their trust in the public health institutions on the vertical axis and their willingness to share data on the horizontal axis. We broke these into four categories to help people really understand what was going on. Starting in the top right corner, we have the protagonist, characterised by both high trust in public health institutions and outcomes and a high willingness to share data. We think of them at being the heart of every story, always willing to do what it takes for the greater good. In the UK, this represents about a third of surveyed participants. The professor still has a high level of trust, but is less willing to share data. They're willing to help us research and society if there are clear procedures and boundaries that explain what's going to happen. So they're the people who really want to understand the boundaries. How long is it going to be kept for? How is it going to be used and who's going to have access to? Think of these individuals as people who are very concerned about their privacy, but are willing to be open if that can be overcome. This represented less than 20% of our respondents in the UK. The investor is the opposite. They have much lower trust in public health bodies, but are quite willing to share their data. because they know it has value and want to make the most of this. This represented nearly 30% of our respondents. These are the people who in the past have really focused on the monetization of data and have been very interested in how they can get their either a service or actually a cash exchange for their information. And then finally, there's the non-conformist, who has both low trust in public health bodies and very low willingness to share the data. They have their own, often very strong views, and are the sole arbiter of what's worthy of their attention, irrespective of the potential for greater good. And given they're 20% of the population, that leaves about 80% of the population that could in some way be taken on this journey if communicated in the right way, whereas the 20% is probably going to be slightly more challenging to get them to sort of participate. These archetypes are important because they show us that people are influenced by different things, and therefore there is no one-size-fits-all approach for convincing people to share data, either to help fight COVID or otherwise. For me, I think I'm somewhere between the professor and protagonist, which has made me think through how often I really challenge the boundaries and procedures versus sort of wanting to feel like I'm helping society. And it's something that as I've been going through this research, I've really started thinking more about. You may also want to think about what archetype you mostly closely align with, but also how do your customers, your colleagues, and your family, as it may influence how people operate going forwards. Since people's willingness to share data can be proxied by how much they trust an organization, we've been digging into the trust equation to understand how and why trust differs for different people, given we all operate in the same macro context and with access, in theory, to the same information. The trust equation is made up of four parts. First of all, credibility. Is the person or organization you're interacting with credible? For example, think about if you've ever had to have surgery. Is the doctor you're talking to credible enough for you to trust them to operate on you? Next is reliability. This differs from credibility in the fact that it speaks to their track record. In our surgery example, you might be asking yourself, have they done this before? How many times have they done this before? What is their success rate? The final component of the numerator is my interest. Is what the person or organization proposing in my best interest? So you'd hope in the case of surgery, they were giving you the best option for your interests. But it's something that sort of plays on your mind, particularly if people are offering you multiple choices. And then finally, the denominator, their interests. Are they proposing to do something for some underlying motivation? Now, in the surgery case, you would hope not, given, you know, we have the NHS service, but that might not be true in other places where fees or different things, you know, may influence decision making. So you can see in sort of a healthcare concept, it's quite a sort of straightforward formula. But obviously, as you start thinking about data sharing, these questions may move. And for each of those archetypes, it can be quite different. So we can think of the equation as a seesaw where you're constantly making trade-offs between an organization's credibility, reliability, and my interests versus their interests. And this can balance and change over time. When we dug into the survey data, we found quite different perceptions about how individuals trust private sector companies with their data. For example, when asked under what circumstances would you trust private firms with your data, only 5% of our investor archetypes answered under no circumstances. That means 95% of them believe there were circumstances under which they would share data with the private sector. So there's really something in that monetization value that they're willing to be convinced of to overcome their fears. However, ask the same question, two-thirds of nonconformists believe they would never trust a private firm with the sector firm with their data, irrespective of what they're using it for. Of course, the interesting dichotomy here is also between stated and revealed preferences, as many people don't realise the extent to which they are already effectively trusting private sector data with companies with their data, with or without their knowledge. We think of this as the growing trust gap between the non-conformists at one end of the spectrum and the protagonists at the other end of the spectrum. And this actually affects how we all communicate, both in a sort of government COVID response perspective, but also as we think forwards within our own businesses. This is important for policymakers because we're moving to a world where data plays an increasingly important role on managing society. This is the basic cycle policymakers around the world are following to manage outbreaks of COVID. Again, information drives each step of this virtuous cycle. For example, data is needed to decide on debt repayment strategies and how and when to get the country back to work. A growing trust gap between different pockets of society will break this down, and will make it difficult for policymakers to respond and could therefore hamper the recovery. For example, if the strategy for recovery does continue to have a focus on contact tracing, there will need to be a focus on establishing that enough willing people are willing to participate. So in summary, what can we learn from this as we all take forwards into our own businesses that we're running or where we have responsibilities for data? Well, data and personalised data in particular have proved to be critical now more than ever. But more importantly, consumer perception to data sharing continue to evolve and will continue to evolve depending on the situation and the sort of communication around it. This does prove an opportunity for your business if you think through how you can actually win that public trust. We've learned that COVID is a real public trust example where it's absolutely vital to be able to actively manage it. However, not everybody will come to the same trust conclusions. We all think about trust differently, and this creates another set of customer segments against what we normally think about in our customer segmentation day to day, where we may consider gender, income, location, and other sort of metrics. We may need to start looking at how do we layer in these archetypes to really think through the customer base. So data privacy remains at the heart of everything that we do, at the heart of all decision making. Because as soon as you lose trust, such as via a hacking scandal or, you know, misuse of data for a purpose that wasn't communicated, it's very difficult and takes a long time to rebuild that. Don't forget to communicate and be transparent to your customers on your commitment to privacy to help continue to build that trust. We're seeing more and more focus in industry and many businesses on being very, very transparent with people, not just hiding it in the T's and C's under vague statements. And all of this does mean that beyond the crisis, there will be a renewed focus on the role and importance of either the chief data officer, data governance roles, and analysis roles in delivering beyond the COVID-19 war footing. You will need to continue to rally around your data architecture and data model to identify that there are really data critical data points that you as an organization need to make decisions. Most of the time, in most instances, you'll have had to make them a lot more quickly in recent months and with less available real-time data than perhaps normal. So this is the time to evolve that way of thinking. Continue to use scenarios to test your readiness, but also encourage all management to use data as norm, not just in an emergency. Use this as an opportunity to reiterate the importance of data governance and quality within your organisation, as well as data literacy and capability across the organisation from top to bottom. For example, we've seen some clients run Kaggle competitions to help predict the future impact on the underlying businesses, which firstly creates a crowdsourced insight from across your business, taking the best of everybody's knowledge, but also fosters a culture of using data to answer questions rather than using gut instinct. Adapt to the growing realisation that data sharing is a part of the future business and consumer ecosystem, and that your organisation should have a role to play in this. We are seeing across the UK many public-private data sharing coalitions start to rise, like the London Data Commission and those in Manchester and elsewhere. This is where we work alongside the public sector and private sector to create, you know, safe, anonymised data sharing, but help solving bigger society problems. There's currently a project underway in London with the Greater London Authority to help map London's busyness throughout and beyond lockdown so people can understand where are the pinch points as we try to maintain social distancing. Finally, just to end, as I always say, remember to continue to use the tweet test. Would I tweet what I am doing with my data out to all my customers? And I think if you have that at the heart of everything you do, then you can really, you know, use that velocity to help drive change, but also to really help customers and the general public feel more confident in data sharing. So where does ease and convenience play a part for people? For example, Facebook, such an easy way to keep in touch, but may have low trust in the platform. So I think this is a really interesting question because I think it talks to this dichotomy between actual preferences and sort of underlying preferences of what people actually do. So if you ask someone, if you describe Facebook without using the word Facebook and you describe how much data you were sharing, there may be people who say, actually, that's not for me. But actually, when we are going through life, the convenience of staying connected to people and, you know, being able to share information with friends and family has, you know, some value that we're all trading off. So it's that constant seesaw effect of putting things on either end. I know, you know, Facebook have gone through quite a journey, as have other companies, to really sort of address some of these challenges. And, you know, we're all constantly having to make those trade-offs. So we've seen change there. And I think, you know, we're seeing regulators also respond on what that might look like going forward. But it's an interesting one. And I think for myself, when I think about where I sit across the archetypes, I have to challenge myself when I say I'm a particular way. So am I like a professor? Well, yes or no, because actually I also like to share my data on things that are more nebulous in terms of what that data is used for. So I think it's an interesting challenge. So I hope you found that useful. Please do reach out and connect with me. I'd be happy to talk about this more. Thank you.
Deborah, you are such a huge supporter of Women in Tech and for our work in particular. We cannot thank you enough for engaging with us and being a guest on this episode of She Talks Tech. And thank you to all for listening. I'm sure you found that session really insightful. If you want to find out more about Deborah, you can connect with her on Twitter. She is at DeborahLabsOW, or you can find her on LinkedIn. Whilst I'm on, I'd really appreciate it if you'd subscribe, rate our podcast and give it that 5-star review. Keep listening every Wednesday morning for a new episode of She Talks Tech from We Are Tech Women.